Okay. Before I start, I just wanted to say Grace is not here today because she's having to work, but her mother, my mother-in-law, Mother Marion, is here in her place. Mother Marion is first time here, and I think you met her, but yes. I just want to say how delighted I am to have her here. And she's 98 years old. Still makes all her own clothes, makes quilted and knitted lap robes for old people. I don't know where she finds the old people. Knits booties and bonnets for babies, but cooks all her own meals. And it's getting hard to get 8 hours of work out of her, though. I was kind of, when we were doing the sign-ups for these things, I thought, well, it would really be an interesting topic to explore. And it was a delight, the last thing, to hear Connie talk to it in terms that, in my religious past, not accustomed to hearing, you know. I mean, accustomed to thinking now, but... Emily Dickinson said, I never spoke with God or visited in heaven, but certain am I of the spot as if a chart were given. And so it is. We know because mind tells us so. When we contemplate our eternalness, we know because we share the mind that says it does. Nevertheless, we're human, so we look for arguments. You know, theologians look for arguments. They look for evidences, and you know, they look for these cosmological and ontological and teleological word soup arguments, things that mostly confuse us as ordinary, everyday people who don't care how many angels stand on the head of a pin. So I look for evidences too, and. I had my brother died a few years ago, and had a rough life, and in the process of trying to turn his life around, he died. And sometime after his death, I saw him in a very lucid dream, I was aware that I was dreaming. But we were in a very dark place, and we were swimming. When we were kids, we swam a lot together. We were in a very dark place, and we were in the water. And he was swimming around me. And I knew it was him, though no word was spoken. I knew it was him, though this was a baby swimming around me. A baby. He says, yeah, it's me. And then he swam away. And I knew he was starting over again. It was just as clear conclusion to me, mm-hmm. And this time I'm going to try to do it better. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen him again. Mm-hmm. He's probably irritating somebody right now. Maybe he's dancing out in the middle of the table somewhere. I hope he is. But that's kind of an evidence. Another evidence for me, though, that's one of the grave ones. Keats said, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. Its loveliness increases. It shall never pass into nothingness. To me, life is beautiful. And applying Keats's argument, it will never pass into nothingness, but its loveliness increases. It's like the Abrahams, and we never get it done. It just keeps on. So that's an evidence to me that, that something as beautiful as life never ends. Another thing, though, is unlike Dickinson, who never spoke with God, I speak with God on a regular basis. every day, many times a day. The conversation never ends. The melding of minds never ends because it's the way it always has been. So certain am I of the spot because a chart is given in my mind. It's there. Kind of like Longfellow's poem, The Psalm of Life, Dust Thou Art, to Dust Returneth, was not spoken of the soul. Bodies come and go, but we just kind of hang in there because we're not done. And I kind of like it like that.
Thank you, Bill. Wow. I feel speechless after that. That was, wow, I just want to hug you. I looked at the topic of touching the eternal, and at first I thought I didn't really have that much to say, and then I sat down at my computer and came up with a bunch to say. And I tend to think in paragraphs and chunks, and so I said to myself, when have I touch the eternal? I realize that I have glimpses of the eternal. Pardon me. I see it in my kids. I've seen it in visions. I've seen it in broader views. I've even seen it in flashes of anger. There I go again with inappropriate times for seeing things. But so I'll start with the anger. Anger and sadness. There are times when I see touches of the eternal there. And for me, all life boils down to is a really good movie. And any metaphor for life, you could point to a movie and make an argument. And the movie Titanic really hit me hard. I was mourning for those people and the senseless death and all the sorrow. And any movie that is historic, so it really happened, and so I really get into the feelings of it. But then I sat and pondered it, and I realized that all of those goodbyes have long since been resolved. All of those people who mourned, those people who they were lost, they've met again. It's been resolved. It's over. And not only for them, but for all the eons of time. And I was taught that we have to wait until the sweet by and by, meaning everybody has to die and they're all in a holding cell. And then at the end, we all get to meet up again. And I just thought, that's just too long. But no, it's all been resolved. My great-grandmother has met her mom again. And there's been a reunion in heaven. And to me, that's life-giving. And that tells me how eternal and flowing the universe is. I had a vision, and I've talked about it in here before, so I was awake, and I just saw all of my family on the top of this huge icy mountain, and there were gazillions of people, family I knew and loved, family I didn't know, but there was this large sense of, we're here, we made it, we're all together, and we're all praising God, and it was a very triumphant feeling, and that vision stayed with me for a long time. So that, to me, is very powerful. And my kids amaze me a lot. I see it in my kids. I overhear them having conversations, and it's not necessarily poetic or intentionally profound, but I overhear them saying things like, well, after I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God when I come back if I can be a lizard or if I could be a Bengal tiger or a dinosaur. No, you can't be a dinosaur. Dinosaurs are away. Well, God can make me a dinosaur if he wants to. So they know. They know that it loops around. They know that they are eternal. And then they know that my father, their granddad, loves them very much. They have no doubt about that whatsoever. And I love that that's instilled in them. I've had several conversations, speaking of my dad, who passed away almost 13 years ago. I've mentioned that my relationship with him has become stronger over these past 13 years. I've spoken with several of my loved ones I've actually went through a medium once, and I spoke with my grandmother and my aunt. and my dad. I've spoken to them through conscious effort and through music. My dad speaks to me a lot that way. He was the minister of music at First Baptist Church, so it's no surprise that he speaks to me in that way. But what I notice the most when I'm talking with them is that there's no sense of urgency. My thought would be that if you got a clear channel, you would take this time to impart something grave and dire, or, you know, some instruction, you know, do it, do it, do it. But no, it's very lighthearted, fun stuff. My Aunt Kitty once, when I was driving, she said, I want you to get, send Rhonda, her daughter, one of those new 20s. The new 20s had just come out. And I had an argument with her. It's like, what about two 10s? She's like, no, I want the new 20. What about an old 20? And it's just, I mean, what is that? But it was real. It's as real as I am here, that conversation we had. And it was all very lighthearted and fun, and I love that. Or it's sweet stuff. My dad told me to send my mom a recording of Ray Charles's This Song Is For You. I was never more certain that it was him speaking to me. You could not convince me that wasn't his directive. And he asks me to give her flowers occasionally, and I know that it's real. And if it's not lighthearted, it's messages of gentle love and encouragement. My grandmother and my aunt tell me to write. And maybe I might actually listen to them. Just messages of deep love. And closing, when I can really feel it, again, I'll circle back to the movies. I love any movie by Universal Pictures. I love the intro because it's an aerial view. You're out in space. When it says it's a Universal picture, you're circling the planet and the stars are around and there's this evocative music. And it just makes me feel, wow, yeah! And that to me, really, more than anything else, says we are eternal. This is it. I love that. Anyway, that's my take on touching the eternal.
It's great. I'm going to talk about celebrating the eternal. Usually our lives kind of revolve around our talk when we start focusing on what we're going to be talking about. And there was a quote in the brochure for this month. There's a bunch of quotes from Ernest Holmes in here. And the one that really spoke to me says that people are immortal because they're made of immortal stuff. All people are immortal not because they choose to be or because they believe in some particular doctrine, not because they're Christians, Jews, or pagans, but because they're divine. And so I wanted to represent the pagan community a little bit and talk about an important holiday that's coming up at Samhain. It'll be on Halloween, and it's the third and last of the harvest holidays. And it marks also the beginning of the new year for the pagans or the Celtics. Samhain is a celebration of eternal life, and it's a day when we can remember that our physical death is not the end. It's not. We don't go to ashes. We continue on, and so we can invite our ancestors in to join us, or our loved ones to join us in on the festivities for that day, and we can also commune with our ancestors in a way that's unique because we no longer have that sense of being separated by time or physical dimension. You know, they say about Samhain that the veil between the physical world and the non-physical world is very thin. Well, I think it's always thin, as certainly you've spoken about, both of you have spoken about. It is thin. So, in celebration of Samhain this year, I have a special opportunity. I have an aunt who was 94 last June, and I had this community treat for her. She made her transition last Sunday. She spent her entire life living in Zurich, and she was the youngest sister of my grandfather. So it was an honor for me to know her, to get to know her a little bit. She was one of the first PhDs in Switzerland. Switzerland, if you don't know, is one of the most repressive countries of women. And women were not given the vote until sometime late in the last century in some of the cantons. And a lot of their laws are oriented towards, you know, men maintaining property. So my aunt chose not only to get a PhD, which was unheard of, it kind of made her unmarketable for marriage. She also decided she would never marry because she didn't want some man telling her what to do or to take over her property. She was also a really beautiful woman, so I doubt that she was ever lonely for long, but simply she had made a choice in her life. Her doctorate was in zoology, and she worked with animals for the first part of her career. And then when she was about my age, I don't know what made her decide to change fields, but she eventually became the curator of the Far Eastern art collection in one of the museums in Zurich. And she wrote many articles on Buddhist symbolism and religion. And she was well respected within the field of Tibetan Buddhist art. And I learned a lot from her. Most of what I knew about her came from my grandfather. If you get to know somebody from Switzerland, typically they're a little bit reserved, and so she rarely talked about herself. But when I was with her, she spent hours talking to me about the things that she loved, which is Tibetan Buddhism. And she'd take me on tours of art, she'd show me books, and she'd show me some of her own precious art collection. And so, although my time with her in this life was relatively brief, and we had a language difference, she spoke a dialect that I don't understand, and we are geographically separated, she asked me several times to come live with her in Switzerland, and she would allow me to study with her Tibetan Buddhism. And I, you know, because of my life circumstances, I said, no, I couldn't do that. But I think, you know, in so many ways, it was like she wasn't physically alive to me because she lived so far away. But yet, through who she was such an enormous influence on my life. She was the one who gave me the freedom to make a lot of the decisions that I've made in my life that were kind of foreign to my own immediate family. And so I think of my aunt as having given me that gift of freedom through who she was, not through a lot of physical contact in this life. And so her passing over to the non-physical in totality last weekend was a unique experience for me because I was able to contact her in a way that was more beautiful and full and sweet than I'd ever contacted her before. Mm-hmm. I tried to make contact with her last Sunday morning and couldn't somehow reach her. And I talked to Earlene about it, and Earlene said, well, you know, your aunt said don't, you know, you get the word, don't go over there to Switzerland. And so, you know, again, you know, she doesn't want contact with you right now. Well, it turns out that's when she was making her transition. And so I have felt her, over the past few days, emerge more and more fully into the non-physical, and it's such a beautiful thing. But in a way, it's been like she's always been that way for me because she wasn't physically here for me. And I think, wow, what an awesome gift she's given me to be able to touch the immortal right now in this lifetime. Thank you.